Professors FM.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast. Mike Lewis and Doug Battle. Doug, a lot of different directions to go with this. You want to talk about Taylor Swift again?
ESPN sure does. They can't stop talking about her. It was kind of hilarious on that broadcast because some random player would do something and they would pan to T-Swift in the crowd. Let's see what she's drinking.
And Deadpool and Wolverine?
No, who are they? They're not important. they were in her shadow, as was everyone else. You could feel the jealousy from Mahomes' wife. Yeah, there's that one picture of her, and she's sitting there.
I don't even know this. Has his brother got involved?
Well, it's a matter of time. I mean, he's itching to get her on one of his TikToks.
So for those of you, because I don't know how much our audience crosses over with the world of TikTok and Instagram, but what's Mahomes' brother's name? I mean,
Jackson Mahomes?
Several moments. I remember my daughter was exposed to Jackson Mahomes before she knew who it was. It's kind of like this little craze of how Taylor – have you heard about this guy, Kelsey, that Taylor just put on the map?
Did you see the jersey that one of the fans had made? And it was like bedazzled 87 Kelsey jersey, and it was spelled K-E-L-S-E-Y on the back. I'm like, is that a joke?
Okay, so the Swifties have invaded the NFL. The NFL is welcoming in the Swifties. Here's the question, Doug. Is this a mistake by the NFL? Or is this just harmless fun that we'll forget about in 3 weeks?
I think we'll forget about it. I think the NFL and ESPN are welcoming Taylor Swift and her fan base with open arms, because why wouldn't they? Their viewership like triples every time she shows up at a game.
But should the NFL, and look, this is kind of a classic marketing question. Should you build your brand, like the core of your brand, or should you just have meaningless publicity? So should the NFL be engaged in essentially clickbait? Now, it is the most epic clickbait available in the universe, right? But it's still meaningless clickbait.
I think meaningless clickbait is the strategy right now. I don't know if you saw the Toy Story game. What was that about?
I'm so full of negativity, Doug. I thought,
yeah, but like, you're a marketing guy. What's the deal? They don't even have a Toy Story movie coming out right now.
So let me get my soapbox and let me sort of figuratively stand on my soapbox. So there's the phrase, and I'm sure you've heard it now, but the phrase that you hear a lot in industry, in the sports industry, with all this concern about getting to Gen Z fans or Gen Alpha fans, is we have to meet them where they are. Have you heard that?
I hear it all the time.
So we have to meet them where they are. So we will do this animated version of it. And then the kids will somehow be exposed to this, though I don't even know where. Yeah. I mean, like on my cable, I've got this cable machine in my house, right? And I'm talking into the voice remote and it keeps telling me like I don't have premium enough access. I pay like $400 a month on my cable bill, I think. And I don't have premium.
Mike, I got to help you cut the cord, man, if you're paying $400 a month.
Well, and again, there's an exaggeration here. But okay, so Doug, this weekend, I have a subscription to Peacock, okay?
Right.
Who has a subscription to Peacock? And I found out that I did not have premium Peacock, so I could not watch the Illinois-Purdue game.
Yeah, I accidentally got Disney Plus with ads, and like here I am watching Ahsoka and also watching commercials for other Disney products. I'm like, I thought I paid a premium to not watch commercials. I thought that was the whole point of streaming.
Okay. So again, I'm distracted from the real issue here, which was what? It was
the Toy Story game.
The Toy Story. So I don't know. Does that actually build the core brand? Does that invest in fandom, or is it just kind of a fever dream of the marketing department? Well, kids like cartoons and toys. Look, I mean, part of it is, Doug, Toy Story is almost more targeted towards my demographic or millennials.
Yeah.
Children, right?
At this point, the familiarity is certainly there with people in their in their 30s and up, pretty much, more so than the kids. And I gotta say, Mike, I think we're underestimating the minds of young children, because when I was a child, I was obsessed with football, like actual football, not animated, like, oh, here comes Zurg, like down, and there's fire behind his feet, and Buzz Lightyear to the rescue for a touchdown.
Do you remember, was it last year when they had the Nickelodeon game and they were sliming?
Yeah. It's just one of those, like, just because you can do it doesn't necessarily mean you should do it. And yeah, I think this is we're in an era with the metaverse and all this where it's like, oh, we can do this stuff now. How interesting.
Right. But you spend a little bit of time in the corporate world in like advertising, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You can imagine the meetings where this became, where everyone sort of signed on to this idea without anyone going to the idea of, well, what's step two? Right? Like, what's
how do this? Also, what does this do for our actual core base, the actual fans?
Well,
same with the Swift stuff. Like, the NFL's backdrop on Twitter right now is pictures of Taylor Swift at an NFL game. I mean, their numbers short term are doing great. What is the experience like for the guy that's gone to the Packers game in the cold for the last 30 years, feeling like his everything he loves is being diminished or diluted by pop culture?
That guy sucks and he's boring. Taylor is really kind of cute and fun and pop. I mean, I think that's that kind of mentality invades all of these marketing departments, whether that they're at the NFL or they're at ESPN. People will always, it's like the marketing department will chase the glamour. I mean, I think there's like this class of advertising where you go, oh, that was a really clever ad.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was for.
yeah, it's like me every Super Bowl, like, what's your favorite ads, and I'll list like the three funniest ones and not know. But yeah, in terms of T-Swift and the NFL, one theory I've heard is she's got a movie coming out. Like, she's got a theatrical release of her concert coming out. I think they advertised it during one of the broadcasts this week, and so there's a little speculation that Miss Swift is playing the system quite cleverly with her timing with Mr. Travis Kelce. And again, pure speculation. This relationship, it's the biggest power couple since Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson. Former President Donald Trump has commented on it, saying he doesn't think it's going to work out, but he wishes them the best. I don't know why we needed that insight from a former president.
How about if I say two things can be true, right? At the same time, right? This could be just something that evolved. And it could be something that, as it evolved, people started to see opportunities.
Yeah, I think. I think that's probably true. Travis Kelce is
okay. What's
benefiting from this as well?
Okay, and if you're Travis Kelce, if I'm Travis Kelce, my best case scenario is that she writes a number one song.
Oh yeah.
About our breakup.
About how he dropped the ball.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah. That would be the ultimate victory for me. It's like for the rest of my life. Yeah, that was me.
That was me. I'm the guy. I think the only way this backfires for Taylor is if the Chiefs had lost to the Jets and if the Chiefs had lost the prior week. And because there was that with Jessica Simpson, with Tony Romo, where it felt like there was a curse.
And they keep bringing up Brian Urlacher and Paris Hilton. So I think we've seen this show before, but I don't think Taylor Swift is number one with a bullet, right? And there is no other. I don't think there's a number two, right? I mean, you mentioned Beyonce, but I think it's a different. She has she's transcended the power rankings. I think
she has, and I think the most entertaining part of the whole thing, as much as I'm sick of hearing about it, is when you have. On one hand, the Swifties pretending to care about football or to understand or trying, making an effort to understand football and kind of the blind leading the blind with some ringleader of that group leading the charge and educating the rest. And on the flip side, you've got these sports commentators. And like I saw one last night, Taylor Swift's got a song. This is a kind of a deep cut called Death by a Thousand Cuts. And Scott Van Pelt on ESPN last night on his late night show was commentating on the on the replay or the highlights of the game, and he says, and that fourth down was, that was death by 100 paper cuts. And it's like they're trying to reference the Swift lore and don't really know what they're doing. The Swifties are trying to reference football and they don't know what they're doing, and everyone's a mess.
The old days of like the genuinely funny ESPN guys.
I think they still have those moments.
Do they? I don't know who they are. I mean,
it'll never be the same. The Stuart Scott era was undefeated.
Well, my favorite part of it is watching, because again, I can't help but look at this as, again, that kind of this crazy perspective of like of an academic looking at the brands and the fan communities coming into play. But the celebrity pile-on. So Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman and Blake Lively clearly are her entourage, right?
Yeah, I was like, do these people frequent New York Jets games? I didn't know they were Jets fans.
I mean, again, maybe it kind of reminded me of like that the LA Super Bowl, right? Where suddenly all the celebrities came out.
Yeah.
But is everyone using everyone? Is Ryan Reynolds using Taylor Swift to get on TV so people will watch his documentary about Wrexham soccer team, which I've never seen, but I've seen the ads for?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of how it works, Mike. I think that's the entertainment industry as a whole.
Right?
Yeah, I think everyone is using everyone, including at times their romantic relationships, which is where this really gets interesting.
Yeah.
Eventually. So I think that it's at a point right now where we've plateaued. We've hit like the first week, it was kind of exciting, but now like cutting to her on TV, it's like we need something to happen. We need a breakup. And then for Kelsey to have a great game or to have a terrible game, something's got to happen.
Major League Baseball season just ended.
They're getting wrecked by this.
Yeah. How about having Taylor Swift show up at a Braves game? Or
they've probably got like MLB agents calling up like Olivia Rodrigo's agent, or I would say Beyonce, but she's taken. I'm trying to think of using this as a formula moving forward, because MLB, we're in October. October snuck up on us.
Why not have
MLB should be in the limelight right now.
And why couldn't you do Toy Story with baseball, right? I mean, baseball seems to be – the NFL is the one innovating, maybe in silly ways. The NFL is the one catching the publicity, the popular culture publicity engine. The NFL doesn't even need it, right?
Yeah. Baseball might need it.
Yeah.
Baseball might need it. Baseball might need it. Yeah. It was the broadcast, that Toy Story thing, it reminded me of, I mentioned this last week, but the old game, cult classic game, Backyard Football, which was originally Backyard Baseball. And that, again, for me as a young boy, that is actually how I got into baseball, was playing this game with these silly characters that would run around the bases, and you had these power-ups, and it was all the silly stuff that we were seeing. So maybe for baseball, it is a good move for the younger generations. And we haven't seen really much of a progressive effort into modern technology or marketing with baseball. We're talking about a sport where you still have the umpire dictating whether it's a ball or a strike. And clearly there's technology available to more accurately determine that.
The two things. So using technology to make for something more innovative, and again, put me in the category of doubters if this is really a significant engine for attracting Generation Alpha fans, but also capturing this world of celebrities. And I think that's where baseball needs some glamour at this point, right? They need that star power.
They do. And I think that unless it's Yankees, Red Sox. I mean, we could get a Dodgers, Braves rematch, and we could get there's certain like franchises that the local fandoms are powerful enough to draw some attention and some excitement. But on a national scale, it's nothing near what we've seen with the NFL
That first Taylor Swift NFL game drew 25 million fans. I'll make a prediction that this year's World Series draws less than 16 million fans per game. Right. I mean, they're in different categories at this point, and it's about cultural relevance.
Yeah.
Okay, Doug, since we started, I didn't really have an order, but since we're sort of circling around the NFL, okay. I don't know how directly I said this. Justin Fields and Zach Wilson are my two favorite quarterback stories at the moment.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson suddenly getting praise from all quarters, and Justin Fields has three quarters where it looks like he is going to
turn the corner,
or at least maybe some fool's gold, and then blows up in the fourth quarter.
It was kind of the old, like, young LeBron James performance where he put up a triple double and missed the game winning shot, except this was worse because he didn't just miss the game winning shot. It was like he made the game winning shot for the other team. That was Justin Fields' day, and an abysmal start to the season, finally showing some hope, finally giving Bears fans something to be excited about. And
you see, some of those Bears fans brought out that old New Orleans Saints bit of the paper bags on their head.
Yeah, they're at that point. They're talking about Caleb Williams. They're talking about Sam Hartman. And potentially losing that game might have been the best thing that could have happened for them. Because
did you see the press conference?
No, I missed it.
Man, it feels clearly emotional and really it looked bad. And in contrast, it seemed like Zach Wilson getting all sorts of praise for his performance in the press conference. And again, after the last years, the media flip-flop on these two guys is truly stunning.
Well, the story was like every time Fields would make a play, you'd see all the tweets. Can you believe that the Jets drafted Zach Wilson over this guy? And this was a small sample size this one week of football, and you could argue that Fields even had the better week statistically, but Zach Wilson just looking like an actual NFL quarterback for the first time I've seen, and then having the poise and the composure and the leadership to take ownership of his mistakes. He's not throwing coaches under the bus. He's not mopey. He seemed like he was being a leader and on the sideline and after the game in the press conference, and I think people respect that, and I think the media has wanted the Jets to be something this year all year because of Aaron Rodgers. And they talk about it. I heard the term yesterday. This is a Super Bowl team. This is a Super Bowl team. They just need, and the coach even said, if Wilson can play how he played yesterday, we're going to win a lot of football games. And so, you know, I think the media is kind of rooting for them in the way that they were initially rooting for Fields in Chicago to change the Chicago quarterback narrative.
Okay. So total long shot. Zach Wilson turns the corner. The Jets go to the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers wants to return.
I'm not buying it.
Okay.
He's coming off an Achilles. People yesterday were like, oh, he's walking around on it. This is a torn Achilles on a, how old is he, Mike? Like, he's ancient.
39, I want to say.
Yeah. He's 39. He's not a young pup. So I don't see it happening. I think that's the story. That's what the media wants, and they're rooting for it. And they want Zach Wilson to lead the way. And I personally wouldn't mind seeing it. I think it'd be a great story, but I just doesn't seem like that possible with that the nature of that injury.
And it's even difficult given the nature of that division to envision them making a lot of progress with perhaps Buffalo and Miami being the two of the top three teams in the AFC.
Yeah, and Miami, maybe not fool's gold, but maybe a little overhyped because of one game, one performance last week, and then eating a big old slice of humble pie against the Bills, reminding them who's on top in that division.
Isn't it kind of great, though? I mean, just the way these narratives work, where the last year the Bills were like the popular pick of everyone. Yeah. It was their time. And then just a couple of weeks into the season, it's like the narrative became – Miami is creating something offensively that we have never seen before.
Yeah. That's the media, but the bottom line remains. It's kind of like Michigan in football this year in college, where it's like, just because they haven't won it all in the last couple of years, like they've got pretty much a returning team that's made the college football playoff 2 years in a row. And people are wanting to get excited about Colorado or about – it's always the new kid on the block that's drawing the buzz. And more often than not, I mean, you know, a team will get written off and they'll have a little bit more longevity and will be in a much better position to compete. And I think that's the Bills right now relative to the Dolphins, and they'll play each other again, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs. But the Bills are, last year they were the hot team, the hot Super Bowl pick, didn't get the job done, and kind of forgotten, kind of like viewed as a, they're just going to be a bridesmaid forever. I don't know that that's the case though.
Okay. Now Bills fandom, one of the premier fandoms, a small local, but premier fan bases in the NFL.
Yeah.
Jumping through tables.
Yeah. They're great. I felt bad for the one fan. I think you know who I'm talking about. I don't know why he did this as a Georgia guy. It'd be different if it was like on the away field, but James Cook scoring a pretty short rushing touchdown and then going in and holding the ball out like he's going to hand it to one of the diehard Bills fans who's on the front rows, waited their whole life for that moment, and then telling him psych and giving it to, I think, to his O-lineman. It was pretty brutal.
Okay. Pretty brutal. You know, in terms of all of this, right? I saw last week that it was, I don't know, they were showing highlights of like Christian McCaffrey as a kid and doing like these kind of after he scores, pulling out the Sharpie out of the shoe or something.
Yeah, in the mascot game.
And the reality is that, I mean, have we reached the point where you got to, it's like, what a great plot twist. I'm going to give it to one of these loyal fans. No, I'm not. I mean, I don't know what the point is, and it seems wrong, but in some ways it broke through there's an old marketing term. It broke through the clutter. Right.
It certainly did. Yeah, it certainly did. I don't get it. I mean, it was kind of like something George Pickens would do in Pittsburgh, where it's just a head scratcher, but it's like, hey, it's just who he is. I just didn't know James Cook was that guy too. So apparently over at Georgia, they're teaching him how to break through the clutter.
Beautiful. Okay. So Doug, as I'm looking at the NFL this year, and again, I don't even know what, I think I'm the only one still fixated on this quarterback class. So Fields looks demoralized. Three great quarters, but looks demoralized.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson seems like we're going to, Taylor's in the building. Zach needs Taylor in the building to actually care, I guess. Mac Jones looking rough with the Patriots.
Yeah. I don't know if Mac Jones is going to survive that one.
That quarterback class is a complete bust, isn't it? Except for the guy at the very top.
Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, I mean, there's still going to be people holding out hope for Fields. And at this point, I think Jets fans who aren't totally jaded by everything that's happened to them are starting to think, hey, we got this defense. We've got a lot of playmakers. If Wilson can just play how he played on Sunday, we're going to win a lot of football games, just like that coach was saying. And so I think the hope is still there a little bit. There's remnants of hope for those two players. But I think that the consensus is Zach Wilson isn't going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's not a franchise guy, nor is Justin Fields.
Is hope evaporating in a different way for Mac Jones? Is Mac Jones starting to look like a slightly below average starter that's never going to take you beyond mediocrity? And if you're the Patriots organization, is this like being the Dallas Cowboys organization or the Pittsburgh Steelers organization that 8-9, got to adjust for the modern era,
right?
Is 8-9 not going to cut it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like at one point Kirk Cousins was in that position and just in time got better. I would compare Mac Jones to like a Ryan Tannehill, a guy that's got the measurables and he's got enough of the immeasurables, but he's not spectacular at anything. And he's going to make some mistakes that are going to cost you, but he's good enough to be on a team because there's just a shortage of elite quarterbacks in the NFL. There's only a handful of them. And a lot of teams just need a guy that can keep their team somewhat competitive. So I think he's a fringe starter in the NFL. But again, he inherited a pretty good situation in Boston and hasn't made much of it past that first year. So, I mean, if you put him in the same situation as Justin Fields, he's done. If you put him in the same situation as Bryce Young right now, I think he's toast. And so he inherited a good situation. He's very fortunate for that and hasn't made the most of it.
I can almost imagine that Wilson and Fields as well may end up having very good career. This is a, I don't know, long-term prediction slash hot take, may have very good careers, but they're not going to start to see, you're not going to start to see this until like year five or year six for these guys. When they're getting their second chance and they've just had so many because I think with both guys, it seems like some of the issue is the speed of the game, the processing. And so with maturity and repetitions, and so you imagine some scenario where Justin Fields post Bears career is something that I think could be just sort of a really fascinating story, right? So let's say he goes somewhere, he's the backup. Justin Fields as your backup quarterback is a nightmare scenario for quarterback, right? No. The guy that is much more physically talented than you on every dimension. And you're just sort of, you go out, he gets in, there's some magic, some electricity. With experience, maybe Fields starts to put it all together at like age 28. I mean, that might sound crazy.
Well, he also people forget, he was a late bloomer in high school. He wasn't a huge recruit until his senior year, and he just came out of nowhere and went from not really on anyone's radar to people debating whether they wanted to take him over Trevor Lawrence. And on some of the rankings, he ended up ahead of Trevor Lawrence. So he was a late bloomer in high school. Clearly in college, it took him some time to become the player that he was. And my concern with him has always been not just his processing on the field, but his body language off the field and the fact that he looks defeated. Like looking, Zach Wilson, there was something different. Zach Wilson was beaten in that game and he knew he made mistakes that cost his team, but he seemed like he was positive moving forward to take ownership and to correct mistakes and to become a winner. And with Fields, granted, I didn't watch his presser this week, but just typically what I've seen from him is hanging his head, moping.
The worst one I've ever seen. It was, again, saying the right words of, I've got to do better, I've got to play through the system. But the body language is saying the right words with the wrong body language is absolutely brutal. Yeah. He looks absolutely decimated right now.
Yeah. And I've seen it before from him. And I mean, to be fair, Cam Newton was kind of like that when things were bad in Carolina. And he was one when things were good. He was showboating and he was Deion Sanders. And when things were bad, he was down so low. And so it's like, if Fields is ever in a good situation or ever gets the ball rolling a little bit, perhaps.
But Auburn brought out the stars for that Georgia game.
I know where this is going.
And Cam Newton had I think that's a custom-made baseball hat to fit the hair.
Yeah, it was. I don't know how to describe it. I know he has his own line at Belk, I believe, like at the mall. You'll see it. There's a Cam Newton line at Belk, and I don't know. Maybe they need to carry the Cam Newton top hat, baseball hat. But yeah, kind of an interesting guy. Some guys as they get older, as they age out of their athletic stardom, you start to realize we just assumed this guy was cool this whole time. And as it turns out, he's kind of a bizarre fellow.
Okay, Doug, isn't that the truth that in general, like, and you're too young to get this, cool at 25 can very often just be bizarre and awkward at 45?
It's true. I mean, it's kind of obvious example is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's people that argue he's cool, but he's clearly a very different guy, kind of an eccentric fellow. Maybe not have been the perception when he was a young stud and kind of entering the league and playing at a high level. And of course, he could still play at a high level if he were healthy. But it's the older you get, the more those quirks start to stand out. And it just seems like Cam Newton's one that embraces his oddities. It's like he's almost a Dennis Rodman. He almost, like, there's part of him that wants to be that. He's a little more normal than that, though. A little bit more chill, a little more cool.
So far,
he's still getting older, though.
Okay, Doug, you got anything else on the NFL, or you want to move to college?
NFL. Just Joe Burrow sucks now.
Yeah, I mean, this is the part of the season where it's still kind of coming together. It does look bad with Burrow, though. I mean, So, coming back from an injury, I think
playing through an injury, yeah, that's the narrative at least.
Perhaps just the general curse of Cincinnati that is never going to work. In the
it's just workout. For that Cincinnati fan base, that year two of Burrow going to the Super Bowl, losing, but feeling like we've got this young team and we're going to be back year after year and it's a matter of time. And now it's starting to look like that might have been their shot at one with Burrow for the near future, at least. And so that's got to be, I know every season they've got such a great receiving core and they got that quarterback and they got all the flashiness that you want as a fan base. And they get all excited that this team's going to do
it. I think they also have decent uniforms. Those white uniforms with the black stripe.
Yeah, those are nice.
Those are nice. Those are distinctive.
They're distinctive. And it's something too that the fans have kind of been clamoring for. There's been designs on the internet for years of like, oh, they should do these all whites and they should and the franchise actually did what the fans wanted.
Okay, so you're the fashion expert on the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so the white tiger, is this somehow an homage to the Vegas? What are those two guys? The magicians with the white tigers? Siegfried and Roy.
Oh, I seriously doubt it. I think it's just...
Where else do white tigers exist, though?
In Bengals country.
Okay.
Yeah, in Bengals country, when they need to do a white out. That's when the white Bengals come out.
Okay, and I mean, you're saying that with half of a... That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
If they brought out a white tiger.
Football stadium?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Mike's all about the live mascot. What was it like a week or two ago? You were talking about what coach was it that wanted to bring out a live like lion or something?
Lion. Yeah, I am all about the live mascots, even though they're controversial. Look, Doug, I mean, if we're ready to move to college football, I love when Auburn lets that eagle loose.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's always been speculation that some Alabama fans going to be up in the 600s with a sniper rifle based on Alabama's history of poisoning their trees on campus where they roll them. And, you know, some Harvey Updike kind of guy that got a lot of hunters in Alabama. I know that from living there. So, but yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's great. It would be cooler if they had a tiger too, though. LSU's got a tiger.
Yeah, well, but I'm a white tiger. Let's go full Vegas on this.
Hey, Auburn did a whiteout this week, like in the fans. Was it? No, they did an orange out. Never mind. They do whiteouts, though. And it's like, yeah, I do like this white tiger idea.
Yeah, no. Okay, Doug. So I think we're in the realm of college football. Your Georgia Bulldogs, still number one, beating the Auburn Tigers or War Eagles. What's
Plainsmen.
Yeah, okay. College football season's shaping up a little bit strange. Georgia number one.
Everybody sucks.
In 3 years, right? Or a long time.
Yeah.
No one's impressed by the Georgia Bulldogs, though.
No. The Georgia Bulldogs aren't impressed by the Georgia Bulldogs. You got to realize, Mike, it's kind of amazing to me that the expectations are what they are. This is a team that lost 25 players to the NFL in 2 years. So that's your entire starting offense and defense.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
these preseason
in particular, Doug, how many first round picks off the defensive line?
Yeah, I mean, every player on the defensive line starting unit and then several more across two seasons. So it's absurd, like the amount of talent that team has lost. But my point with this is that the rankings in college football are based on the preseason rankings, which are completely abstract. They're made out of thin air. Georgia's number one or Georgia's number two, or whatever. Alabama's number three, and then they just move down from there, up from there. So a team like Georgia they've underperformed in every game. They haven't met their expectations, and yet they're number one. And I think it makes fan bases like Michigan, even like Oklahoma, irate, and it's understandably so. I remember like as a Georgia guy not being number one and feeling like we've got such a better team. These guys are barely beating so-and-so. They struggle against UAB. They're struggling against Auburn, who's like the worst Auburn team in 10 years, and Auburn's been bad for 10 years. And it's just like it's almost like with boxing where they're like the undisputed champ. It's like until somebody beats them, they're going to just be considered the champ. But I don't think Georgia's great. right now, I also don't know if anyone in college football is. I think Oregon looks pretty good at times. I think Oklahoma looks really good at times. I think Texas looks really good at times. But all these teams look vulnerable. And it is kind of a fun year because it feels like it's up for grabs, truly.
I think some of the ESPN guys was watching some of the pregame programming. We're talking a lot of – hyping a lot about Washington.
Washington and Oregon are getting a lot of hype.
But I haven't seen any it's tough. I mean, I haven't tuned into a single Washington game. I don't know.
They play those late slots.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you might be asleep over on – like, I mean, that's the case with Washington. They're always playing late at night, the Pac-12 after dark games. But, I mean, the fact that Washington is considered ahead of Oregon and USC, with both of those teams having potential Heisman candidate quarterbacks, one having a Heisman winning quarterback, it's pretty telling as to the fact that there's some real excitement around that team, and it's a team, the program that's been in the playoff before. Many forget because they got smacked, but Washington was in the inaugural playoff.
A very different kind of season shaping up. And again, the Pac-12 has a tendency to disappoint, but it looks like the Pac-12 is the power conference this year. And Georgia had lost a game and dropped down, let's say they had dropped down to below, let's say USC undefeated at, if Georgia had lost that game and ended up ninth, you would not have had an SEC team in the top eight.
Yeah, and I think if Georgia had played, I watch a lot of teams every week, and it's like, man, Georgia's fortunate not to have played Duke on this week or just any of these teams. And so it's, I mean, you're right. It's a down year for the SEC as a whole. I wouldn't count Alabama out. I've been saying it.
I'm not counting out either. You know what? I still think Georgia and Alabama are likely to be in that playoff, right?
I don't know that they're both likely to be in that playoff, but yeah. I like Alabama as a, like, objectively looking at it. I like that they're kind of written off. Mm-hmm. They're starting to find a formula that works since that Ole Miss game. Their resume is starting to look a little better with Texas continuing to win, but then Ole Miss winning games as well and looking like a pretty good team. And so I think that Alabama's, if you look at their path moving forward, it's almost hard to imagine them not making the SEC championship. And then at that point, it's a play-in. So
okay.
A play-in against a vulnerable team if it's Georgia.
You mentioned to me, I think in a text, that Taylor Swift had replaced Deion Sanders.
As ESPN's darling.
Yeah. Okay. That game was great, right?
I gotta be honest. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, how could anyone have expected that, right? So yeah. USC comes out and men against boys, blowing them off the field.
Yep.
And then the comeback, and again, an onside kick away from having the most thrilling game of the season, potentially.
Had Colorado won that game, Disney would be buying the rights to the movie tomorrow. They would be in production already, even though there's still a writer's strike. They would be working on the Deion Sanders comeback story.
And again, I don't think I'm alone on this one. I don't think Colorado is great for college football. Players riding around in Rolls Royces, though. Maybe this is going to happen everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
Constant sort of. I mean, again, it's. I think there's a somehow, Doug. I think I find myself saying Taylor Swift and Deion Sanders are a lot of fun. I don't know that they're actually great for the sports long term. Deion might be great for college football. I'm not convinced he's going to be great for Colorado, but fun is addictive. And I will tune into the same way I'll tune into any Chicago Bears game that's on that I can find on my TV. I will tune into every Colorado game, right? It's completely compelling TV. And again, I don't even know that it's all that good. I mean, the fandom is such a weird thing, right? It's like when there's so much attention on Deion Sanders or Taylor Swift, it's almost like the attention brings us to it.
Right? 100%. Yeah, nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. And we're seeing that in play when in its fullest with Deion Sanders, particularly with, like I said, I mean, pretty much any sports fan is when they at least are switching channels between games, going to flip over to that Colorado game, see what's going on. It's a spectacle.
Yeah. And I don't, it's really kind of an interesting thing because, I mean, Shador is obviously still, God, man, I don't know. I mean, that second half, maybe I'm a believer. You know what I mean? It's like that struck me as this is going to be an interesting story from here on, right? That wherever Colorado goes, and I don't know if they play, I don't know how the Pac-12 schedule looks. I don't know if they have Washington as well coming up, but they're going to a bowl game. And
yeah, for sure.
They are going to be the most interesting bowl. They're probably going to be the most interesting bowl game that is not in the college football playoff.
They're going to make the Cheez-Its Bowl watchable for the first time ever for the casual fan. Yeah, they're bringing bowl games back now. Man, I mean, shoot, we talk about the 12-team playoff, and obviously it doesn't feel like there's definitely not 12 elite teams in football this year. But with a 12-team playoff, a team like Colorado would actually have a shot. Right at making it and having a chance to play in Alabama or play Florida State or Michigan.
First round matchup of Notre Dame versus Colorado.
Yeah, or Michigan. I mean, Michigan's like they've not had success in the playoff in the past, so they might feel vulnerable, and Colorado's going to be would be hungry. So you start to see where the appeal is in that. But college football fans are on another level. I feel like yesterday watching NFL, I was like, wow, the football's so much better than Saturday. Like the football, these guys are so much better at what they do as a unit. There's so much less like busted coverages and guys missing tackles and all the rest, overthrows. But you just can't beat fandom and college football. And Mike, is now a good time for me to run through some of the great moments of fandom this week.
The videos on these, we talked a little bit about before some of the videos. The videos are must watch. So if you're just listening to the Straight Audio podcast, you got to search these videos out.
Oh, you'll see it on our socials. Yeah. Follow Fanalytics Mike. I'll put something together.
What was your number? What was your top? I mean, sort of count them down, I guess.
Yeah. So I'll start with my alma mater, number 5. This one might be a little controversial. Several of these are controversial, actually. We've got a Georgia fan barking at an Auburn woman who's just going about her business, walking on the campus. This is absurd.
This is at
Auburn, on the road, on all fours, barking like an animal.
So this poor woman, minding her own business, on her home turf, right? This fool comes up, starts barking at her on all fours. She basically turns and tells him to stop it. And the internet explodes, calling her a Karen. I can't even imagine doing that on someone else's campus.
Yeah, it's gutsy.
That's the stunning part of it, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, that one was like, again, just kind of, there's a stereotype that people at Georgia used to hate where the opposing fans would say, oh, I got barked at the game. And it's like, what are you talking about? We don't go up to people and bark at them. And taking ownership of that insult and just saying, you know what, that's what we're going to do now with this guy. So again, 5, because don't necessarily love the behavior, but it was obnoxious, certainly was absurd. And it ain't nothing finer in the land than a drunk, obnoxious Georgia fan is what they say. So this guy was living up to the reputation.
We should do this fandom countdown, but we need a sponsor of like, what's that hard iced tea?
Like
Twisted Tea.
Twisted Tea.
You know, because somehow fandom requires several drinks to really fully flourish.
And there were several drinks involved with many of these. I don't know if one was involved in this next one, though. This was just pure. The elderly Arkansas fan, someone videoed him looking over his shoulder, clearly frustrated with the season Arkansas is having and the really regression they've seen under Sam Pittman since year one. And seen texting just horrible things. I'm not going to say any words. This was not a PG-13 rated text message or Snapchat or whatever it was. But as impure as the words were, there's something pure about the passion here from this elderly man who likely has grandchildren and still is so consumed by Arkansas football that he's willing to pretty much say the ugliest things you could possibly say about a person, about his own team's head coach.
100%, right? And why wouldn't he? I think you're probably pretty reasonable as a fan, right? But It's amazing. I mean, because it listen to any, like the heyday of talk radio, right? Where it was always yokels in their cars calling in and just like basting the coach and the foolishness. But God, they would also, but you know what? That guy would probably also throw hands in defense of Sam Pittman from an opposing fan base, right?
Oh, I caught myself this week, like during the Georgia game. Georgia Twitter, everyone is just mad the whole time. Like, we suck. This player sucks. The coaches don't know what they're doing. These guys are. And then you see, like, an Alabama fan tweet, Georgia's not actually that good this year. And all the comments are Georgia, the same Georgia fans being like, you don't know what you're talking about. You guys are just mad that you lost to us last time we played. And I felt that emotion in myself. And it's like when someone talks about your mom, it's like when they talk about your team, it's like, okay, that's where I draw the line. I can talk about my team. You cannot.
Yeah. It's like, I got three boys and a girl. And it's like, you know, the boys will talk stuff about their sister, but you know,
boy at school is.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, it was pure. That was just pure fandom right there. Another example of pure fandom. This one, definitely some twisted tea in the mix. Ole Miss fan getting KO'd by, and maybe not KO'd in a, maybe not knocked out all the way. Definitely a knockdown though by an LSU player storming the field, and what happened.
And you got to find that one with volume because the kid.
No, I can't post that, Mike. I might have to find some bleep samples to put in there.
But for you folks, I mean, you can watch the video, and the video is great. But when you turn the volume on, the video has a different interpretation. Right? Because the kid is on the field screaming and dropping F-bombs. And I think he drops an F-bomb right as he makes contact with the LSU player. And I think the LSU player misinterpreted the direction of the F-bomb and just dropped him. Now, again, social media is great because then every response is listen with audio and then 100% support for the LSU player.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only person to get dropped on that storming of the field. There was a co-ed who met her match with I don't know how to describe this guy, overly ambitious security guard.
Thick,
solid, well-built man defending Ole Miss's field as thousands of students ran on.
Okay. He had a lot of power, but he was very slow, right?
He could play left tackle for like the Giants.
Like a 300, I'm guessing 300 pounds, between 275 and 300 pounds. Very thickly built, but everyone's blowing past him. No speed, no quickness, until a young lady came up and he just dropped. Boom.
And I don't know like if any assault charges come out of these things or if it's like on Twitter, the narrative is that it's
trespassing.
Oh, it's fair game. You storm a field, you've got it coming for you. And that was, there was a lot of the Jermaine Burton defenders last year, that Alabama Tennessee game when Jermaine Burton infamously seemed to knock over a young lady in the same way.
We need a lawyer.
This security guy was probably just doing his job in his mind.
Right.
I don't know that the LSU could probably claim self-defense. I don't know how much a threat the drunk frat brother was to him.
But for the security guy, I don't know if there's already 3,000 people past you. Are you still defending the field?
He took his job seriously. It's like if I'm an employer and he doesn't even send in a resume, he sends in that video and he's like, this is how much I care. This is how seriously I take my work. This guy's an overachiever. He's the kind of guy you want working for you.
I agree with that 100%.
Okay. So
if this show ever truly takes off, we will search him out and make him our security guy.
Yes, 100%. That's the guy you want. I mean, he should be protecting the President of the United States. That guy straight to the Secret Service. He takes his job very seriously.
I was thinking it would be kind of amusing if our security guy let 90% of the people past him but kept trying. Just by the watch.
He tries so well. He's a great trier. But getting back to the Ole Miss fan, what impressed me was not only that he got knocked down, but that he popped right back up after. I mean, he got drilled like, I thought he was knocked out cold when I was first watching the video. In his face, there's a lot of screenshots of his face because he was not prepared. Like, he was that kind of mess around and find out meme where he found out for sure. But the fact that he popped up the way that he did and he immediately yelled an insult.
I love the way you're cleaning up the internet in real time, that mess around and find out.
You got to, Mike. You got to. I mean, job's on the line here. So mess around and find out. Immediately pops up and yells an insult at the player that hit him. And the player was still trying to come at him. Like, he was like, come at me, bro. Like, he had zero fear of the guy that had 200 pounds and could bench press him with one arm.
Let's go full, like, I was going to say something. I was going to say old lady, but that's probably not appropriate in 23. Fiddle around and find out. Fuss around and find out.
I had a teacher in Christian school and in high school that used the term muck for
such sticks around and find out.
I'm
in the South.
I'm not going any further from this. But the adrenaline running through that fan was clearly at an all-time high to take a hit like that and pop right back up with the confidence of Michael Jordan.
In the clutch. We're going to touch base with him the next morning and see how he's doing.
He probably don't remember any of it.
but has a 6-inch bruise somewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. So this week was the gift that kept on giving, not just in college football. We had some action in golf this week. You don't typically see much more in golf fandom, but a slight hand clap. Well, not until the Ryder Cup, where, Mike, do you want to take the lead on this one?
I don't know what motivated any of this. Just saw the video, a gray-haired old man, and it makes it even more stunning. Just went for a run across the turf and into the water. I have no idea what the point was, but it was spectacular. Didn't you try and stop him?
No, they were just cheering. He was a man of the people. Everyone's there for a good time, and he's like, you know what? This will make it an even better time. I'm going to go for a swim. And he gave a double fist pump to show that he was victorious in his lifelong mission to find his way into the water at a prestigious golf tournament.
All I can hope is that they don't prosecute guys like that. That they just slap
I think them they should be given a medal or something. Yeah, I had zero interest in the Ryder Cup until I saw that, and I watched that several times.
Agreed, 100%.
I mean, they might be paying guys at this point. They might find guys like me and be like, hey, we don't have great viewership with the non-golf crowd. Could you go run in the water? But again, it being an old elderly man, I like that's what I want to be when I'm an elderly man. Like, I aspire to that, like to live life to the fullest in that way at that age. A real inspiration.
What's your bucket list of athletic events to run across?
I don't know.
You know, it's work on that. It happened on football fields full of large human beings and shoulder pads and helmets, which you'd think would
be the what's worst. Concerning is the players are starting to take the liberty of defending the field themselves. And so that's one that I think it's great when like maybe on a baseball field where you have those security guys in yellow jackets and the players are just watching. And you got a guy that's kind of shifty, who's juking a couple of them out, breaks a couple tackles and gets the crowd cheering for him. I think those are typically the more exciting ones, but man, the Ryder Cup runner, that guy is a legend forever. I think like they can paint a mural of that and I'd hang it up behind me for the podcast.
Okay, Doug. And so who's your number one fan moment of the week? Because I've seen this video and it is whatever word you want to use, breathtaking, spectacular, performance art.
Performance art, I think, is the best way to summarize it. Another Ole Miss fan, Potty Toddy. The Ole Miss fans were not messing around. It is a shame that Ole Miss lost to Alabama. Of course, that was on Alabama's turf, but seeing how they celebrated a win over LSU,
they need their moment in the sun, don't they?
Yeah, like seeing how they celebrated a win over LSU, who's ranked like 5 spots ahead of them, like not that big of an upset. But had they beaten Alabama, that campus would have exploded. This Ole Miss fan, apparently one of the ones who got by the guard, climbs the goalpost, which we've seen 100 times. But he was a little bit, it meant something extra to him, I guess. He, not only did he climb the goalpost, he started, I mean, I don't know how else to say it, Mike. He was making out with the goalpost. he was making out with the goalpost. And the best part about the whole thing is,
performance art, right?
Performance art, yeah. He's standing on top of text that's on the post from some campaign, I guess. And so right below the man who has shimmied his way halfway up the actual post and then come back down, he's standing on the crossbar. And right below his feet, it says, "Your career is ready." This is like an actual thing it said.
And I mean, as I'm watching that and as we're talking about it, all I can think is, God, I hope he's a theater arts major.
His career is ready.
It turns out, Doug, he is a theater arts major.
Are you joking?
At Ole Miss. And he is now going to be on the cover of their brochure for that program as the most. No, of course I'm joking. But
he puts the bro in brochure.
Wouldn't that be the perfect plot twist for all of us, that he was a theater major or some type of aspiring performance artist?
I think in that moment he was an aspiring performance artist. And yeah. And to top it off, Mike,
the alcohol policy at Ole Miss, Doug? Have you been to a game there?
I think the policy is to drink as much as your body can tolerate.
Okay, so it's fully encouraged. There's no searching that goes on.
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, just based on what I've witnessed from their students in these situations.
Was that the same fan base last year that had the fist fight in the stands between the frat boy looking guys?
I'm trying to think. I know exactly. Yeah. Well, I think that was them. I think that was Ole Miss. Yeah. So yeah. They've got their brethren there are okay. On another level.
Tennessee is our favorite fan base, still kind of a hangover from last year. But Ole Miss, we're looking for you. We're watching
on the door. It's kind of like how BYU's our favorite, the Cougars our favorite mascot, but the Oregon Ducks always like doing some cool stuff. He's knocking on the door. That's kind of the problem with Ole Miss is they don't have the upside. They're not the sleeping giant that Tennessee is. Yeah. And if they ever had a team that could compete for a championship, we would see some incredible things. This week was just a preview of what that would look like. And again, this fan topping it off by doing a kind of a backflip belly flop onto the grass. He's another one. It might've been fun. He had a lot of adrenaline running through his veins on Saturday night. He's probably feeling some bruises going into the week.
Yeah. He missed.
He might be listed as questionable for next week's game.
Can we say that he missed the dismount?
I think he nailed it in his own way.
Yeah.
In an artistic way, a very subjective way.
Okay, so I've just published some data on political fandom. Yeah. Trump is going to win. Look, when you look at fandom in the realm of politics, even it's more powerful than looking at an opinion poll where you see, Trump's got 55%. Because when you ask people, are you a fan of someone? That means they don't just like them. That means they're not going to move off of it. Right.
Right.
You can say, hey, there's this terrible scandal. This person's your team has cheated for these recruits, or
they're going to double down. These are Penn State football fans that pack out the stadium after everything that went down.
They will double down. So when I looked at this data, I pulled data from about 1,000 likely Republican primary voters. So a pretty hardcore group. Trump is bulletproof. Absolutely bulletproof. Fandom is more than just who would you vote for out of these candidates. It becomes something really powerful of, I identify with this guy. Yeah. I identify with this team. So you attack this team. You say this team's cheating. You're saying that I'm cheating, right? You're saying that I've committed a crime. And so it really does make the Republican, from a marketing strategy standpoint, some things have been made about Trump skipping the debate. Mm-hmm. There's no way he should show up to the debate. If 50 or 55% of that voting base not just likes him, but considers themselves fans of him, and the number of people that say they're not fans or anti-fans of Trump is also very low within that group. It is an absolutely dominant performance. Now, I mentioned Vivek Ramaswamy. He does surprisingly well. And so on these kind of fandom metrics, he has truly started to resonate with people. And again, I think it's an interesting thing where he's kind of positioned himself as something of a fighter out there for Republican members of the Republican base. And people have glommed onto that. In contrast, Tim Scott, who has come out with nothing but a positive persona.
Reasonable guy. Yeah.
has not, in a completely positive message, has not developed very much fandom at all. He's really almost completely stalled out.
We drawing everything back to sports like I do. We talked earlier about James Cook kind of cutting through with his, why did he do that? Why did he act like he was going to hand the fan the ball and then not give it to the fan? That was strange, but we're talking about it. It seems like that type of method is what's working in these types of elections where there's a plethora of candidates. And it's like, who's going to cut through? Even if it's the person who hands the ball to the fan, they're kind of forgotten. There's a million of those that happened this week. But James Cook's the one we're talking about. And then the media is talking about it, and then people are talking about James Cook. And then people know who James Cook is. And then people actually say, well, I actually think it's kind of interesting what he did. And I feel like that's Vivek. I feel like that was Trump in the 2016. Well, this kind of unorthodox and new era of politics where cutting through is more important than creating a platform that seems reasonable to a lot of people.
You can add one more element to that. I bet you that Buffalo fan loves what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate it. Okay.
Okay, Doug, we're going to talk a little bit about NIL coming to the high school ranks, but we'll save that to next week as we're about at an hour here on the podcast. So like I said, you guys can start to see this political fandom analysis. We're going to continue with this throughout the fall. I was making light of it, but it's actually really kind of serious and insightful stuff in terms of how this process is about to unfold. And so you can take a look at how Pence and DeSantis and Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, and stunning Chris Christie's anti-fandom is completely stunning. And you can find all that at fandomanalytics.com.